Thanks for joining us. I'm Diane Rehm. Most of you know Fred Rogers is the host of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, the children's television program that's been seen for more than three decades on public television stations. Fred Rogers is also an ordained minister, a student of child development, and a father and grandfather. All these experiences are shared in his new book, The Mr. Rogers Parenting Book. And he joins us this hour from the studios of WQED in Pittsburgh. We'll take your calls throughout the hour. Do join us on 1-800-433-8850. Well, Mr. Rogers, what a great pleasure to talk with you.
Good morning, Diane Rehm. I'm pleased to talk with you, too, here from Pittsburgh and the neighborhood of make-believe.
You know, I think you and I may have the two slowest voices in broadcasting.
But don't you think we need some slowness?
I do. I do.
Some deep and simple time.
Exactly.
In this life.
You know, our 42-year-old son was in town yesterday because we were cooking together. And I mentioned to him that you were going to be on the program this morning and asked whether he remembered that I used to save my ironing till the end of the day so that he, his sister, and I could all watch your program together. And indeed, he did. What a delight your program is.
Well, thank you. And it's a treat to know that you and your family grew up with us.
Absolutely. I understand that the very first time you saw television, you were not very impressed.
Well, no, I saw it when I was a senior at Rollins College, and I was home for the Easter holiday, and I just saw people throwing pies in each other's faces. And I thought, you know, if this medium is going to be in everybody's home, and of course at that time it was in very few people's homes, I thought this could be used for a lot better than that. And so I was all set to go to seminary as soon as I graduated from college. And I said to my parents, you know, I think I'd like to try television. And they said, what? You've never even seen it. And I said, well, I've seen enough of it to know that I'd really like to put my hand in it.
So. And actually, in college, you also majored in music composition.
Yes. And so I was able to write all the songs for the neighborhood, you know. I'm sitting by the piano right here.
Oh, I hope you'll. I hope you'll keep playing for us.
Oh, thanks. Tell me about your son.
Our son is a professor of philosophy at a college in Emmitsburg, Maryland, called Mount St. Mary's.
Uh-huh.
And our daughter, who is 38, is a physician, and she works at the Leahy Clinic outside Boston.
Wow, you must be mighty proud of that.
You bet. I am, and I believe that one of the reasons they are such good and decent human beings is that they did glean from your programs those values of kindness and caring and gentleness toward other people. For you, that must have been something that was truly elemental in your makeup.
I had wonderful parents, Diane, and grandparents, and I even knew my great-grandmother. And I think that the the fruit doesn't fall terribly far from the tree.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my parents always seemed to be thinking about other people. And my grandparents, during the 1918 flu epidemic, they got a group of people together and set up in the armory of the small town where we all lived an auxiliary hospital, because the main hospital was completely filled with the people who had flu. And it was things like that. My grandfather said, well, you just can't have sick people sitting out in the street.
So they really passed on to you that sense of the obligation that we as human beings have for each other. I understand you suffered several illnesses as a young child. Can you tell us about that?
Oh, just all those childhood diseases.
Ah.
You know, I had practically every one of those things. And you were quarantined in those days, you know.
I remember.
You had to stay in your bed in the house.
And you had the curtains drawn for fear.
Oh, yeah.
Especially with measles, that you might hurt your eyesight.
Exactly. And it was during those times that I would make up all kinds of stories with the toys that I had, you know, little miniature figures. I'd have them all over the bed. I'm sure that was the beginning of the neighborhood of make-believe. You know, you may remember King Friday the 13th.
It's with great pleasure that I speak with you today, Ms. Ream. Yes.
And I certainly am pleased to be in your neighborhood, Diane Ream. This is Queen Sarah speaking.
Of course it is. How nice to meet you.
Thank you. Oh, I see X the owl up in the air. Just a moment. Oh, X, come talk a little. Talk with Diane Ream.
I always wanted to meet you, Diane. This is X the Owl.
Well, I'm so pleased to meet you.
Well, thanks. And my neighbor is Henrietta Pussycat. Just a second, I'll get her.
Meow.
Hey, Hen, come on out here.
Meow, 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 meow.
Yeah, it's Diane Ream.
Meow, meow, Diane Ream.
Oh.
Meow. Meow, love Meow program.
Oh, Meow, you're just marvelous. I'm so pleased to meet you.
Meow, too. Meow, 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 visit Meow, 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 meow.
Oh, that for sure.
Oh, how wonderful. Well, actually, isn't that how you got your start in television? You started with a public television station there at WQED and helped to develop the Children's Corner.
Yes, and Josie Carey was the hostess, and Mrs. Dorothy Daniel was the general manager of the station. And the night before we went on the air, and that was in 1953, Mrs. Daniel gave us all favors at a party that she had. And the one favor she gave to me was a little tiger puppet. And I thought, oh, you know, we really should try to use that on the air just to show that that we have affection for Mrs. Daniel. And so the next day I said to Josie, you know, we haven't planned to use puppets at all, but just for today, why don't I poke this little tiger through the back of the set, and we can call him Daniel in honor of Mrs. Daniel. And she said, oh, that'll be fine. So on that first program, I poked the little tiger through and said,
hello, Josie, it's 5:04, and Columbus discovered America in 1493.
And she said, well, Daniel, I'm so glad to meet you. And they talked for a little while, and I thought that would be the end of it. Well, that was just the beginning. And it's almost 50 years ago, Diane, that we did that.
Oh, that's just extraordinary. And it was back in 1960, you see, that my first child was born. So I've been with you for many, many of those years. For those of you who joined us a little late, Fred Rogers is with us. And, of course, for all these years, he's been the host of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, which is now going into syndication. Mr. Rogers has also written a new book. It's called The Mr. Rogers Parenting Book. He joins us from WQED in Pittsburgh. And, of course, he has his piano and all of his friends with him. May I speak, Mr. Rogers, please, again to Meow Meow.
Meow, 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 Diane Rehm.
I so wanted to talk with you again because I didn't want you to leave without my letting you know how fond I am of kitty cats.
Meow, 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 pussycat, meow.
Exactly.
Meow, meow, Henrietta Pussycat, meow, meow, name.
Exactly, Henrietta Pussycat. You are absolutely wonderful.
And I'm meow, so glad.
Oh, and all your friends. You have so many friends around you. And friends are so important for little children, aren't they?
Isn't that so? I'm just was thinking in the talking about the parenting book, that there are so many different people who parent these days, you know, not just mothers and fathers. Grandparents parent, aunts and uncles do parenting, child care workers, babysitters, teachers, neighbors. There are so many people that I feel want to understand young children so that they can be all the more effective in their parenting.
And you know, for me, my husband and I have been married now for 43 years, and anniversary we'll celebrate this week. But it seems to me that the two jobs for which we have the greatest obligations and the two hardest jobs in the world for which we have no training whatsoever are marriage and parenting. And for that reason, I'm awfully glad you've written your new book.
Well, thank you. I think that the only training that we have for them is that we grew up with parents. And so we often take on the role of those who parented us.
And if they parented well, that's wonderful.
It's a blessing.
Of course. And then we can pass that on to our own children in that form. If, unfortunately, as we know, many too young people become parents without that kind of role modeling, then indeed it does have a problem. Mr. Rogers, we need to take just a short break here. And when we come back, we have so many callers who'd like to join this conversation. Will you be patient, please?
I certainly will, and I'll welcome those who want to join with us.
All right, we'll be right back. For those of you who just joined us, Mr. Rogers of television fame, that sweet, wonderful, knowing, wise man who for 50 years has hosted Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, joins me. He has a brand new book out, one that I know many of you will welcome. It's called The Mr. Rogers Parenting Book. You can join us on 1-800-433-8850. Mr. Rogers, I'm so longing to hear one of your songs. I know that this year you delivered a commencement address at Dartmouth College where you sang one of your songs. I think you know which one I mean.
Was it the one called It's You I Like?
That's exactly right.
It's not the things you wear. It's not the way you do your hair, but it's you I like. The way you are right now, the way down deep inside you. Not the things that hide you, not your diplomas. They're just beside you, but it's you I like. Every part of you. Your skin, your eyes, your feelings, whether old or new. I hope that you'll remember, even when you're feeling blue, that it's you I like, it's you yourself, it's you, it's you I like. And it is you I like. Thank you.
Thank you. I would imagine that those Dartmouth students probably gave you a standing ovation for that song. We've had an email from Ruth. She says, thank you, Mr. Rogers. My daughter, now 17 years old, and I were devoted fans of yours. When she was 4, I left the room momentarily and returned to find her gone and the television running. She was in her room cleaning up. Mr. Rogers says, if you want to say I love you to your parents, you could clean your room. Several years later, when she announced she was too old for your show, I intended to write you and thank you because you were part of our family and never did. So, years tardy, here's my heartfelt thanks.
How generous of her to say that. But you know, that comes from another song, Diane.
Oh, good.
There are many ways to say I love you. I won't sing it, but there are so many ways to say I love you.
Are you sure you don't want to sing it?
Well, the middle part is, cleaning up a room can say I love you. Before you're asked to do it, drawing special pictures for the holidays and making plays, you'll find many ways to say I love you. You'll find many ways to understand what love is. Many ways, many ways, many ways to say I love you. Isn't that what life's all about?
Absolutely.
Trying to find many different ways to say I love you?
Absolutely. And we have another email here from Falls Church, Virginia, from John, who says, I'm 33 now, but Mr. Rogers was a huge part of my childhood. In fact, when I sat for the CPA exam a few years ago, Mom wrote Mr. Rogers about it. He responded with an autographed picture and a letter wishing me good luck. Mr. Rogers, you are special because you're you.
Oh, John, what a marvelous memory. And to think that people can use the work that you've that you've given over the air. I mean, that must give you great satisfaction, Diane,
well,
to know that there are those who are listening to your words and being nourished by them.
I so appreciate your saying that. You know, in fact, I've been doing this program now for more than 23 years, and we now have a second generation of listeners coming along, the children of those whose parents have listened to the program for years. So, yes, you're right. It gives me great satisfaction, but it also makes me feel very humble to have had the opportunity to go into people's homes, cars, and offices for all these years.
Yeah, you've been a radio neighbor to many.
Indeed. Let's open the phones now. And first we'll go to Plymouth, Indiana, and to Mary Jo. Good morning to you, Mary Jo.
Good morning, Diane. Good morning, Mr. Rogers.
Good morning, Mary Jo.
Oh, I'm so excited to talk to you, and I just wanted to call and thank you so much for shaping my daughter's lives. I have an 11-year-old and a 5-year-old, and I just told the 5-year-old, I said, now, Andrea, I need for you to be quiet because I'm going to talk to Mr. Rogers on the radio. And she said, is he real? And I said, he sure is. We had the opportunity to visit Pittsburgh several years ago, and when my husband told me we were going for his work for a short time, I was so excited because I thought, oh, I want to go see them tape Mr. Rogers. And we were so disappointed when we found out there weren't any, you know, audience viewers for the taping. But we did visit the Children's Museum, and we saw some of the retired puppets, and we sure enjoyed that. And then I also wanted to tell you that whenever PBS has children's shows on, because our PBS affiliate doesn't have children's programming the whole day, but whenever they do, there's no other TV station or video or any computer. If they want to do something that's involving an electronic screen, it's PBS only.
Ah, that's marvelous. Thank you so much for calling, Mary Jo.
Thank you, Mary Jo. It's a treat to hear about your family, and I wish you well in all that you do.
You know, speaking of television, Mr. Rogers, many parents have been so concerned about the violent images on television. For example, the ones that are real, such as 9/11. What do you think parents can do to help their children make sense of those kinds of images?
It's very difficult with them being so pervasive. But I think the best thing we can do is first try to understand what our children are thinking, to try to be good listeners to begin with. I was listening to some children after the 9/11 catastrophe, and I was amazed to discover that many of them thought that that was happening every half hour of the day and night because of the repeats on the news was being rebroadcast over and over again, and the children thought this is happening every minute. And they also, some of the very young ones, thought that it was happening in their town, not very far away. And so I think the best thing we can do for very young children is to, first of all, try to understand what their understanding of it is, but then to let them know that we will do everything we can as the adults in their life to keep them safe. Even if we're scared, we are the adults, and we need to be strong as the children are growing, and let them know that we really will be in charge, and we will keep them safe.
In your book, the Mr. Rogers Parenting Book, you talk a little about how children confront their fears through play.
Yes. I did that a lot when I was sick as a child. I made up all sorts of characters that could help me through those times. And I think that play is one of the most essential ingredients of a child's life. And to be able to make up solutions through puppetry or any kind of imagery is an enormous help for a child. I love being able just to give raw materials for play for children, just to see what they do with it.
You're talking about simple materials, such as puppets or blocks or that kind of thing.
Exactly. And things that the children can use to draw and make up. That. Do you know, Diane, that we have learned in studying literacy that one of the greatest helps in the development of literacy is dining room table conversation?
Indeed.
When children and adults get together to have dinner, and this doesn't happen all that often in our society, you know, there's a give and take. They learn new ideas. They learn new words. But the table conversation is just essential for helping children get ready to learn to read.
There are so many parents who are introducing computers at earlier and earlier ages with computer games and teaching that child to use the computer and seeing these images on the screens. What is your reaction to those very young children learning these computer games?
Well, there are some games that are quite educational and not scary, but there are many that are quite frightening. And I think that it's important for us to realize that we are the children's parents or grandparents or teachers, and let them know what we feel. Children long to belong. They want to know what their family stands for. They want to know what their school stands for. And even if they say, oh, I want to do this and that, when you say, you know, that's not the way our family works. This is who we are. I think they really love to know that they are part of something important.
At 25 before the hour, you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. And let's go back to the telephones to Westminster, Maryland. Good morning, Rebecca. You're on the air.
Hello, Diane.
Hi there.
Hi. I am so pleased to speak with you. I admire you so much and listen to you every day.
Thank you very much.
And I am just so thrilled and feel so privileged to get to speak to Mr. Rogers. I wanted to tell him about his effect on our autistic child. Back in the 70s, when he was in his toddler and later childhood ages there, he was so involved with himself and so removed from what was going on in the world around him that the television could be on and all of his siblings excited and laughing and enjoying a program, and he would be sitting with his back to everyone and just self-absorbed. But when Mr. Rogers came on, he would turn and sit and watch the television, and he listened and he connected with Mr. Rogers. And I think that that was a starting point for him to become less involved with himself and more involved with some of the things that were around him. And he learned to listen and to enjoy other people and enjoy activities. As the years went by, he is 32 now.
And how is he?
He is married.
Oh, I'm so
He
glad.
Has a son of his own who is the most beautiful grandchild.
Oh, I'm so
in the
glad.
World.
That must make you very, very happy, Mr. Rogers, to hear that kind of comment.
Well, I must say that Rebecca's call is the greatest gift that I could have today, and I'm speaking in a halting way because I'm practically in tears. I didn't know her son personally, but to think that he grew up in a family that allowed him to become himself at a schedule in which he was able to become himself is to me such a blessing. And now you see that he having his own son, I bet he is a compassionate father.
He did. He learned compassion. Over the years, as he grows, he still learns. But when he learned compassion, it was so rewarding and so heartening to us because we had been told that most autistics never learn to have sympathy and to feel for others. And he does. He is a very tender-hearted boy now, and a wonderful father. Oh, he loves that baby.
Oh, I'm so glad, Rebecca.
I hope you'll give hugs to both him and his little son.
And if you joined us a little late, Fred Rogers is with me. You know him as the host of that wonderful daily program, Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. He now has a new book out. It's called The Mr. Rogers Parenting Book, Helping to Understand Your Young Child. We'll take just a short break, and when we come back, we'll talk more to Mr. Rogers with your questions and comments. Please stay with us. Well, Mr. Rogers, we're back again. Are you and all of your friends there?
You bet we are. I don't know whether you know that song, but please don't think it's funny when you want an extra kiss. There are lots and lots of people who sometimes feel like this. To be able to acknowledge that there are people who have needs, and that's everybody.
How do you feel about the fact, and I must say I regard myself as at times a subject of ridicule because of my voice and because it is so slow and has such a wavery tone to it. How do you regard the fact that you have been made fun of, you've been mocked by some, perhaps who've done it lovingly, but nevertheless have made you a subject of their comedy?
Well, you know, at first I thought, I wonder why people do that, because each one of us is unique, and that just happens to be who I am. But then one day I was at NBC in New York, and I was walking down the corridor, and the man who played on Saturday Night Live came out, and he was one of the people who did Mr. Robinson's Neighborhood, you know? And he came out and he said, "The real Mr. Rogers." This was Eddie Murphy. And he said, "Oh, the real Mr. Rogers." And he put his arms around me and gave me a big hug. And I thought, well, you really have been doing that with a lot of affection. And that happened also when I was with Mr. Carson, Johnny Carson, on his program one time. And he said, "You know, we've had these takeoffs about you, and I just want you to know that we would have never done it if we hadn't liked you.
Ah,
we perfect. we don't want to make somebody famous that we don't like."
Exactly.
He said.
Oh, that's wonderful.
All right. People,
go ahead.
Do people do that? Do they do takeoffs on Diane Rehm?
Well, I have a voice problem, Mr. Rogers. It's called spasmodic dysphonia. And I have to have treatments to the vocal cords periodically because my voice, the vocal cords clamp down. And it's a neurological problem which has slowed my speaking tremendously and has also created this tightness in my voice. And yes, there have been sort of funny skits done or what have you, but I have to assume that because I'm still on the air after all these years, that there is a growing tolerance, that there is an appreciation for the content of what we do rather than focusing so much on a problematic voice.
Well, Diane, it seems to me that it's exactly what we talk about on the Neighborhood all the time, and that is that what's inside is far more important than what's on the outside. You know, Saint-Exupéry, in his book The Little Prince,
yes,
said, "L'essentiel est invisible pour les yeux." What is essential is invisible to the eye. Mm. And he goes on to say that it's only with the heart that we see clearly.
Well, that moves right into this email from Dennis, who says, "I am now in my final year of seminary to become a Catholic priest. I am currently a transitional deacon. God willing, I will be ordained priest in the spring. I believe growing up as a child, knowing that Fred Rogers was a minister, was a large influence in making my decision."
My. Thank you for that, Dennis.
Isn't that lovely?
And wonderful.
We have a caller in Ann Arbor, Michigan, Don, who'd like to speak with you. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Diane. Good morning, Fred.
Good morning, Don.
One of the things, Fred, for which I respect you and for which I don't think you get enough credit is that you did not become a commercial sellout. You didn't endorse a line of clothing or games or toys. And while Sesame Street and Barney and the rest delivered generations of kids into the open arms of Kmart and Sears and so on, you did not. And I thank you for that.
Well, you're generous to mention that. There, as you can imagine, there have been opportunities for such things. But I've always felt that whatever we produced, I would like it simply to be something that would extend the neighborhood and to help people to use our work better. And that's why we've concentrated on recordings and books. And this latest book, I don't know whether you've seen it, Dawn, but it took us about 50 years to write it. I'm not being too facetious, because all of the things that people have given us through the years, through their comments and their anecdotes, and I've tried to make this parenting book not only for mothers and fathers, but for grandparents and child care workers and all those who come in contact with very young children. I've wanted to give the legacy that really has been given to me through the years. I've worked with such wonderful people.
Again, I thank you for your focus and for the purity of your efforts.
All right, sir. Thanks so much for your call.
Thank you, Dawn.
And now to Dallas, Texas, and to George. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Diana. Good morning, Mr. Rogers.
Good morning, George.
Good morning.
Originally, I called with the thought of asking why you decided early on to make music such a major part of how you communicate with people. But as I was sitting here listening to the discussion, I began to see a parallel in my life with yours. I too was sick early on, and I think a lot of what I am today, I credit to that time when I had to be alone and be comfortable with myself and develop a sense of creativity. And I wonder if children today lose that with all the commercial games and commercial toys that are available and don't develop into their full potential because their sense of imagination isn't challenged. So basically it's really two questions, the music and the sense of imagination.
The music, I think, came from my grandfather. His name was Mr. McFeely, incidentally, and that's why we call our speedy delivery man Mr. McFeely. But my grandfather early on would teach us songs, and he played the fiddle. And I think that one of the most satisfying times of my life was when I was able to accompany him as he played. It was a song called Play Gypsy, Dance Gypsy, Play While You May. Play Gypsy, 'tis a lovely day. I'll never forget that time.
It's a wonderful song.
And he would play the fiddle and I would play the piano. But just the other night, I was feeling a little blue, and I went to the piano, and I could literally laugh and cry through the tips of my fingers.
Why were you feeling blue?
Oh, I think it was just because I had a stomach ache. But I'm so used to good health, you know, that I like to be able to be strong and be able to do whatever the assignment is. And there are times when we realize, hey, you know, we don't have to be perfect. And that's such a relief.
Absolutely. At 7 minutes before the hour, you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. Mr. Rogers, you...
You know, I didn't answer the rest of
George's call. Oh, forgive me.
Call.
You're absolutely right. Please go ahead.
Well, he was talking about these video games
yes.
and things taking away the possibility of creativity. And I think that I'd see it with my grandchildren. I think that they find different ways of expressing their creativity. And one of them just takes off and dances. Whenever he feels he needs to express himself. But he also is exceedingly adept at these little games, these video games.
Yes.
And so I think that we all find our own way, and I hope that children know that it's perfectly fine not to do the same thing that their neighbors are doing all the time. Life is a continuum, and so are the ways of expressing life and creativity. There's no perfect parent, there's no perfect child, but we all are human. And that's what I dedicate my work to.
You did not tape that last show with a sense of finality as far as somehow saying goodbye to those children. I presume that was deliberate.
Oh, yes. This library of tapes that we've developed, you know, we have about 1,000 programs. It's really evergreen, and we deal with most of the major growth tasks of childhood in many different ways, and those programs can be used forever.
So they will go on. Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood will be with another generation of children, at least. What would you like to play for us as we end our time together?
Well, I'd like to ask you, would you like A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, or would you like the song that we usually sing at the end, which is, It's Such a Good Feeling to Know You're Alive.
Yes.
It's such a happy feeling. You're growing inside, and when you wake up ready to say, I think I'll make a snappy new day. It's such a good feeling, a very good feeling, the feeling you know that we're friends. And I feel that we are, Diane.
Oh, Fred Rogers, I have so looked forward to this hour and so enjoyed talking with you. I'm appreciative for your new book, the Mr. Rogers Parenting Book. I think it's going to help an awful lot of people, just as your program for all these years has been with and supported so many children. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Diane.
And thanks to all of our listeners. I'm Diane Rehm.